It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered. I'm home.
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh, my God. We're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
God, this dialogue is shit.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and fight me.
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster. Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Welcome to episode 723 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off here for Extreme Rules Sunday, September 26th, 2021. We are going to have Extreme Rules predictions for a pay-per-view with exactly one stipulation match, which is very unusual for an Extreme Rules show. At least we have one Extreme Rules match in the main event between Roman Reigns and Finn Balor, who will be all painted up tonight as the Demon. Going to talk about that pay-per-view. I got a ton of AEW notes, including Adam Cole news, which is most interesting. And a little bit later on, we'll talk NXT 2.0. We have the draft coming up. Draft night for WWE begins at the end of this week. I've got a bunch of draft moves to share with all of you here this week. But I want to first mention, for those of you who are not aware, the Audible link, which allows you to start up a trial of the Audible.com service and get one free book. It was down recently. They were switching servers. Everything is back up and running. So if you would like to take advantage of our offer, which is one free audiobook when you start a trial with Audible, you can do so. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. It is back up and running. You can get yourself one free book that you get to keep even if you do not continue on with the service beyond the 30-day trial. And there's a ton of great wrestling books on there. Daniel Bryan and Justin Roberts had a great book. Bob Holly, you know, Stone Cold has his book on there. Ton of great wrestling books to choose from. So go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. When you do, you help out the podcast and you get something for free in return. If you want to make a PayPal donation, you may do so on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. And these fine folks are VIP. Roll call. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. I would think there was something wrong if I didn't hear Paul's name this week. But Paul, I hope you're doing well. Night Stalker, Naif Al-Safar, another one of our great supporters. West Coast, James Herrera. Big Bear, Brian Pissera. Killshot, Keith Hart. Beast Mode, Brock Joseph. The Chicago Slayer, Willie Eichard. Velvet Revolver, Robert Murray. Ostentatious, Alan Carter. New York Punk, Arnold Modesto. John Raging Mad Riffle. The Firebomber, Craig Foster. Sherrod, Big Daddy Boyd. Caleb Showtime Lindley, Pastor of Pain, Damian Yule, The Warlock, Sean Rue, haven't heard Sean's name in a while, Roy the Toy Cowboy Pace, what's going on, Roy? Gravedigger, Brandon DeBlanc, first time donator here to the podcast. Also, shout out to Jimmy the Freak. You can check out his YouTube channel for Jobbed Out Wrestling. YouTube.com/JOBDOUT, which has news and opinion on current wrestling, trivia, top lists, interviews with legends like Jake the Snake, Terry Runnels, Justin Credible, and others, plus a focus on some of the weirder moments in wrestling like the power outage on Monday Night Raw 15 years ago this weekend. So you can find him by searching JOB D and the word out. Jobbed Out on YouTube, or visit youtube.com/JOBD out. And one final happy birthday I want to send to Chris from Bethlehem, who wants to thank Jose, I hope I got this list right, Jose, Kim, Michelle, Jackie, Steve, John, Christina, Rob, Maritza, Edgardo, all the kids, and his wife, Angelina. That is a big family. It's much bigger than my family. So happy birthday to Chris. And shout out to all of our new channel members as well. We picked up a whole bunch of them on YouTube this week. Put a nice big fat smile on my face. So thank you for that. I am going to have a Dark Side of the Ring review separate and apart from this week's episode. Last week, of course, was a very newsworthy episode on the plane ride from hell and all the fallout from that. So I covered it here on the show and then later on put it on the YouTube channel. This will be hitting the YouTube channel this afternoon. I'm going to be getting that review done as soon as I'm done here. It'll hit YouTube. Depending on how long it is, I might push it out separately, audio-wise, to the feed. But that wouldn't be for another day or two. So for those of you wondering if I'm going to be covering the double life of Chris Kanyon, I am. I did watch it. It was a very sad episode. And I have a lot of thoughts on that, including stuff that was not covered in the episode itself. So watch for that on YouTube later today. WWE Extreme Rules is live tonight from Columbus, Ohio. Not a whole lot of juice behind this show. I come into it with low expectations. I'll be with you live on YouTube as soon as it ends to wrap it up like a birthday gift, so come on by the channel later. We'll hang out. But first, you need to know that WrestleRumble.com is hosting its annual Extreme Rules Pick'em Contest. First place winner gets a $1,000 cash prize, with $100 each for the second and third place winners. All you need to do is buy an entry and answer a series of prop questions to accumulate points, questions about match outcomes, match length, or a question like this: what will happen first in the match between Roman Reigns and Finn Balor? Will one of the Usos enter the ring? Is there going to be a table break? Will a kendo stick be picked up by either man? I mean, you know how much they love their kendo sticks. I mean, we had kendo sticks on Dynamite this week. Or not Dynamite, we had kendo sticks on Rampage. So you know we're going to get them tonight. Is Roman going to hit the Superman punch? Etc., etc. You get the idea. That could be the make or break question that stands between you and $1,000 in cold hard cash. So sign up now at WrestleRumble.com. You have until tonight, right before the pay-per-view goes on the air, so don't wait until the last minute. Don't wait until 7:59 or whatever the cutoff is. Get those entries in right now. WrestleRumble.com. Winners are going to be announced on their social media the very next day. That's tomorrow. You won't have to wait very long to find out if you are a winner. I'm going to mix in some Raw and SmackDown thoughts as we go along here, where they may be appropriate. And then whatever doesn't fit into the Extreme Rules stuff, I'll cover a little bit later on from the two shows. There is no WWE title match tonight announced for the show. There is no Big E, who just won the championship last week. There's no Bobby Lashley. No RK-Bro. So the top acts on Monday Night Raw do not have matches. They are not part of tonight's show unless something gets added at the very last minute. SmackDown is the more heavily represented brand on this show, although, again, we don't know the kickoff match yet. That has not been announced as I am recording this. Liv Morgan takes on Carmella. These two have been feuding off and on for months, dating back to before Money in the Bank, when Morgan was trying to qualify and Carmella was gifted a spot in the match. Boy, you know, when I think back to that and then the current storyline with Naomi, I'm not sure how Sonya Deville gets away with it. She has not been a very fair party on SmackDown. She has abused her power over the last few months. But Morgan ended up taking Carmella's spot in the Money in the Bank anyway, because if you remember, the SmackDown women's title match between Bayley and Bianca Belair was canceled. That was when Bayley hurt her knee. So Carmella got a title match instead. And they moved it off the pay-per-view. They did it on TV. Inexplicably, on Friday night this week, they had Liv Morgan lose in a short match to Zelina Vega, the woman who hasn't won a fucking thing all year. Finally won one, and the person she beat is the woman challenging Carmella on the pay-per-view tonight. So Liv Morgan should win here, because if she doesn't, then what is even the point of any of this? The Usos defend the SmackDown Tag Team titles against the Street Profits, or do they? Angelo Dawkins missed SmackDown on Friday. They said he had some kind of prior engagement. Montez Ford was there. He lost to Roman Reigns in the main event. They had a real good match together. It was a great showcase for what Ford can do as a single. But when it was over, Roman Reigns beat him down with a chair. He gave him a uranage through a table outside the ring. And earlier in the show, there was a moment, it was brief, but there was a moment in the back where the Usos came face to face in the hallway with the Alpha Academy. So was that done on purpose? You know, maybe if Ford is in storyline, he's injured. And again, who knows where Angelo Dawkins is. Maybe they replace the Street Profits. We get the announcement tonight that they're unable to compete. And they replace them with Otis and Chad Gable. I mean, it doesn't even matter. You don't even have to do that. It could be the Street Profits going in there. But whoever it is, they're not going to win the titles. The Bloodline is in full swing. They're not dropping those titles yet. So the Usos are going to win. Jeff Hardy has been added to the United States Championship match between Damian Priest and Sheamus, making it a triple threat. Hardy beat Sheamus on Raw Monday night to qualify. Jeff Hardy took a terrible bump. And when I say terrible, I mean it looked great. It looked fantastic, but it probably felt terrible for him taking it. On a Swanton bomb when Sheamus got the knees up, Hardy bounced. When he hit the knees, he bounced up into the air before landing on the mat. And I thought Sheamus had him dead to rights, but then Hardy ended up winning with a sunset roll-up. If Damian Priest is moving to SmackDown, and I'm not sure he is, but if he's moving to SmackDown and they want to keep the championships where they are because he is the United States champion, I mean, like, he could lose the title tonight and then go on and switch brands. But if he's moving to SmackDown and they don't want to swap the two secondary belts, I can see Jeff Hardy being added so that he could eat a brogue kick and take the pin to get the belt back on Sheamus, and that then frees Damian Priest to be moved over to SmackDown. If Priest is not switching brands, then he is not losing the championship. So those are the only two scenarios that I envision here. I don't think he's switching brands, so I'm going to go with Damian Priest to retain. Becky Lynch defends the SmackDown Women's Championship against Bianca Belair. Becky won the belt from Bianca in 26 seconds at SummerSlam, and it didn't even come after some hard-fought battle that Bianca had, like a Money in the Bank cash-in or something. She just straight-up lost, and she looked bad. And in the weeks since, I think that, you know, Belair has done some very strong promo work. She is still getting good reactions. Of course, she got a great reaction in Knoxville last week. That was her hometown. Becky has been trying her hardest to get the live crowds to boo her. She is getting booed by a lot of people, but I still think it was the wrong time to turn her heel. I still think that this is not the role that she should be in right now. This could have come a lot later on, but the deed is done. There's no sense in belly aching over it anymore. The deed is done. So the question now is, how do you handle the finish if Becky is to keep the title, which I think she is? Becky Lynch will remain the SmackDown Women's Champion. So how do you do this finish? You've got to handle this delicately because Bianca really should not be taking another loss. Enter Sasha Banks. I don't know what her medical situation is, but she has been sorely missed. And if she is ready to return and they're just kind of waiting to get her back on TV, this would be a great place for it to happen. Bianca has the match won when Sasha interferes and costs her the title, because things were left very open-ended between the two of them. So it is not hard to envision Sasha Banks coming back and looking to screw over Bianca Belair. And then if the plan is to split them up in the draft, they could do one last match, Sasha against Bianca, on one of the draft night shows, either SmackDown coming up this Friday or Raw the following Monday. So I'm giving the win here to Bianca. I think Bianca wins by disqualification. So technically she wins the match, but Becky Lynch retains the championship. We have Charlotte Flair defending the Raw Women's title against Alexa Bliss. I've said this before, and I always preface what I'm about to say with this because otherwise the Alexa fans get very upset. And I want to give the woman her just due on this. Alexa Bliss does great character work. She has embraced this new persona over the past year plus that she's been doing this, really going back to July of last year. She's been doing this a long time. And she's got that character down to a science. But she has done absolutely nothing to earn a championship match. The fact that this is even happening is ridiculous. All she's been doing is playing with dolls. What big matches has she won? So the entire basis of this match is pretty ridiculous. Now, their strongest segment together, I thought, came on Monday during Alexa's Playground, which is faint praise. But Charlotte said that, you know, I want the old Alexa Bliss, the 5 feet of fury Alexa Bliss, the former women's champion Alexa Bliss. And she wondered, how did I go from main eventing WrestleMania 35 to fighting with dolls? Which is a very good question. That's a shoot. I don't know. But Alexa said, look, I don't have to play mind games to expose Charlotte. Without a title, what is Charlotte? Without a title, she has nothing. She has nothing to offer. And the crowd chanted, woo, and Alexa said that didn't even originally belong to you. And Charlotte came back at her with a crack about how, you of all people talking about originality, that's rich. Alexa called her a bitch. Charlotte shoved her, Bliss jumped her. And Charlotte got the better of things until Bliss caught her with a DDT, and that was how the segment ended. It wasn't great, but for the first time they had Alexa sort of, kind of acknowledge that she is just playing head games with her opponents, and she's not actually an evil witch who vomits black goo and plays with possessed dolls. She's been conspiring with Kevin Dunn, apparently, and his team of visual effects artists in the truck to fuck with people's heads. That's a lot more believable. But I cannot envision a scenario in which Alexa Bliss beats Charlotte Flair clean. So I'm going with Charlotte to retain for two reasons. First of all, they have their Queen of the Ring tournament coming up next month, which it looks like, I think they're calling it the Queen's Crown, if that trademark application they filed is any indication. And I can see them having the winner challenge Charlotte for the championship to see who the real queen of WWE is. But also, I think they want to do Charlotte against Becky Lynch at Survivor Series. And to do that, since they're doing Raw versus SmackDown again, they both have to be the champion. So for me, all signs point to Charlotte Flair retaining her title. And we have Roman Reigns defending the Universal Championship against the Demon, Finn Balor, in an Extreme Rules match, the only such match of any kind, any stipulation on this entire show. This so-called Extreme Rules show. And it came in the form of an on-screen graphic 6 days before the pay-per-view. Oh, by the way, we have an Extreme Rules match on the show on Sunday. It was like a total afterthought, just tacked on less than a week before the show, just because. They gave us the first match between these two on TV a few weeks ago, and Roman beat him. He already won. Now, he won with a low blow that may or may not have been intentional, but that hasn't been mentioned at all on TV as part of this story. He lost. And then he reappeared as the Demon and suddenly has another title opportunity. The Demon persona is over because it has been years since we've seen it. It's been lying dormant for a long time. But in effect, we're supposed to care about this match because Finn Balor put some paint on his body. That's it. He put some paint on his body and all of a sudden we're supposed to be, oh my goodness, you know, this is going to be so different than the first match we saw. He doesn't wrestle any differently when he's the Demon. We've already established that. It's my biggest knock on him doing the character. There's nothing different about it. But he's got paint on now, and I guess that's the extent to which WWE feels we need any real story going into this match. But here's the other issue. There's another glaring issue with this match. They have already told us that Roman Reigns will be defending the championship against Brock Lesnar in Saudi Arabia next month. So if there was any drama to be had in the fact that it's the Demon challenging for the title and the Demon has yet to suffer a single loss on the main roster outside of NXT, whatever drama there may have been, possibly been in that, went out the window the minute they announced the match at Sweet Saudi Money. We know Roman Reigns is going to retain. We know he's not losing the championship. And the Demon will eat defeat for the first time outside of NXT.
I also think this is going to be the match of the night. I think these two are going to go out there and they're going to kill it. They're going to have a great match. But I wish they would have put some actual effort into this and not been so lazy with everything they have done to get us to this point. Right down to the out-of-nowhere announcement of it even being an Extreme Rules match. Everything about this has just been lazy. Now, they could give the Demon an out by having Brock Lesnar attack him as a way to, you know, ensure that Roman keeps the title for their match next month. And it's Extreme Rules, so there's no disqualification. If somebody were to interfere, the Usos or anybody, it's not a DQ. We know that. But the point is, Roman Reigns is walking into this pay-per-view as the champion, and Roman Reigns is walking out of this pay-per-view as the champion. And that is the lineup as it currently stands, barring whatever match they throw on the kickoff show. Some thoughts from Raw this past Monday. If there was ever any doubt as to who the top champion is in this company, I don't think there was much doubt to begin with, but if there was, WWE erased all doubt on Raw Monday night by having Roman Reigns win not once, but twice on the same show, and it's not even his show. He went to somebody else's show, and he won twice. And frankly, that's the way it should be. There is no one outside of Brock Lesnar. There is no one who comes across as big of a star in this company as Roman Reigns. And I say that as a fan of Bobby Lashley. And for the most part, up to now, they've kept him very strong. Even so, nobody else has the aura on any of these shows that Roman Reigns has outside of Brock Lesnar. When Brock Lesnar shows up, it still feels like a big deal. The feeling in the room, the temperature in the room, the whole vibe, even after all these years that he's been back in WWE, it still just, it feels different when Brock walks into the room. And he's bouncing up and down. And now we haven't seen Brock for a long time, right? He only recently came back, first time in a year and a half, so he had some time away. But there is nobody else. Roman is the guy. He's on another level from everybody else right now. But you do your WWE champion no favors by having him lose twice. 1 week after winning the championship, they promoted a first time ever match between the Bloodline and the New Day for Raw this past Monday night. A match that, as I said, could have headlined Survivor Series in November. They gave it away here. It went 13 minutes. Could have easily gone double that, but it went 13 minutes. It was good for the time that it was given, but this was nowhere near as special as what it could have been. But I'll say this, I love what they did with Bobby Lashley. Outside of him losing again at the end of the show, he interfered in the six men at the start of the show. He laid waste to everyone, baby faces and heels, because he was enraged. He was angry. And why was he angry? Because last week he lost the WWE Championship. And when you are a champion and you lose, you should be angry. Especially when someone cashed in on you after you had already got done defending your title in a long match. I'd be pissed too. Most human beings would be. They wouldn't come out looking all jolly. This is exactly how Lashley should have come out, like a bull in a china shop, wrecking everything in his path. And Reigns speared Xavier Woods for the win, but Lashley laid out Roman when the match was over. It was also the night of rematches. We had Doudrop against Eva Marie. We had Randy Orton against AJ Styles. At least the Doudrop match was over quickly. I reiterate again, I have no idea why Eva Marie is employed as a professional wrestler. Orton and Styles I enjoyed, especially the finish. AJ went to go for the phenomenal forearm. Orton went to catch him for the RKO. And they both stopped in their tracks. And they just pointed at each other. Like the Spider-Man meme. They just pointed at each other. That was great. They each had each other scouted. And then Orton hit him with a draping DDT and an RKO anyway. And he got the win. We got to see the vicious side of Shayna Baszler, which I liked. Her match with Nia Jax did not last very long before Shayna locked on the choke and choked out Nia. After the match, she literally kicked Nia out of the ring and then used the ring steps to torture this woman. She placed her hand in one of the holes on the side of the steps and just started kicking it. Then she placed her hand and her arm at this awkward angle on the steps and stomped on her elbow. And Naya cried and she moaned. I've made those same noises during some of her matches before. Shayna looked conflicted, like she almost regretted what she had done, like she had gone too far. She didn't. And I actually wish they wouldn't have done that. But that's the, I guess, the story that they were going for. But this is the Shayna Baszler that was a killer in NXT. This is the Shayna Baszler who was the NXT Women's Champion for so long. This is the Shayna Baszler that has been missing for a very long time. And now WWE has announced that Nia Jax is going to be out for an undisclosed amount of time after suffering a, quote, elbow posterior fracture and dislocation to her left elbow, which will require surgery. Now, I don't know if that's just a cover story for an actual surgery that she needs. I don't get the impression that it is. I think it's just a storyline reason to get her off TV for a while. Take all the time you need. Better yet, make a trip on down to the Performance Center while you're at it. Got some time off? Go ahead and head on over to the PC. I do realize that this probably means we're getting Nia Jax as a babyface when she comes back. Ugh. WWE is experimenting with an Angel Garza-Humberto Carrillo tag team. They are legitimate cousins. They were not being used. This at least gives them something to do. And you know what? I like the match that they had with Mustafa Ali and Mansoor. They picked up the win. I thought they looked really good together. It looks like they're going to be working as heels. Carrillo is very good. He's just never been treated as anybody the audience should care about or invest in. Garza has been criminally underutilized since his pandemic push on Raw last year when he was working with Andrade and Zelina Vega. He was on television every week. He was getting a push. They seemed to like him. And then a few months later, that was it. And this happens so many times to some of these underneath guys in WWE, including ones who have the potential to climb even higher up the card. It's like you have your moment, you have your program, and then they just sort of get bored with you and you get discarded. And now so much time has gone by, it's almost like how many people are even going to remember who this guy is? I hope they do, because he's very talented. But we have seen this story play out with so many people in this company time and time and time again. He's a talented guy who should be doing more than what he is. And if putting him in a tag team like this is one way to get him back on TV doing stuff, then I'm all for it. I liked what I saw from the two of them on Monday. One luchador we may not be seeing much more of on WWE television, not that we were seeing him at all anyway, is Gran Metalik. Mas Luchas reported that he has requested his release from WWE due to lack of opportunities, and PW Insider followed up on that. They have since confirmed that report to be accurate. He and Lince Dorado both have been seen at multiple TV tapings waiting to speak with management over unhappiness with how they are being used. I have not seen any reports that Dorado has asked for his release as well, only Metalik, who came into the company 5 years ago with a lot of fanfare. This was after the Cruiserweight Classic. He came in with a lot of fanfare. He came over from CMLL in New Japan. He was considered one of the best high flyers in the world. And in WWE, he has been a background player for his entire run there. He was part of the Lucha House Party, you know, back when they were coming out with the piñatas and everything. I mean, this is what WWE does. And they did absolutely nothing with it, which I could have predicted. I mean, he doesn't fit. He never seemed to fit. He never seemed to be a good fit for this company. NXT, he could have thrived in if he would have been down there. On the main roster, it was always going to be Mexicools 2.0. Let's just be honest. Him and Dorado and who was the other one? There was a third guy in the group who split away. His name escapes me. you could tell they got a lot of screen time in WWE. He was always a background bit player in this company. It was a bad fit from the very beginning. Now, we don't know if WWE will grant him that release. I can tell you one person who would be very happy to work with Metalik, and that would be Bryan Danielson. There was a Bleacher Report interview with Graham Matthews earlier this year. Danielson said, "There is this dream match I've always had, and people will look at me and say, what? But that's only because they haven't seen him wrestle in Mexico, and that is Gran Metalik. That guy is awesome. I'm sure that can be arranged. Even if it was just a one-shot appearance. But first, he needs to break free of his contract. And if his request is denied, then he would not be a free agent until 2023. Rhea Ripley and Nikki Ash are the new women's tag team champions. They beat Natty and Tamina with a roll-up finish in 2.5 minutes. Such a big title change this was. A roll-up finish in 2.5 minutes. What an epic battle we had here on this show. I don't know how a title change like this is supposed to feel special, but obviously it did not. Nikki rolled up Natty to win the belts, and then on SmackDown, Nikki wrestled Natty in a singles match that was too short to be anything to even talk about. I've noticed a pattern here recently on WWE television. And I don't know if they're doing this because they look at the quarter hour ratings and they see that maybe there's, you know, the numbers reflect the lack of interest in the women's matches, or I don't know. But it's been a noticeable pattern that WWE has regressed a lot. They have regressed a lot to the Divas era of 10 years ago when it comes to the amount of time that they give the women on television in these matches. And then after the match, on SmackDown Friday, Tegan Nox and Shotzi Blackheart, they drove their tank, Shotzi's tank, down to the ring. They fired a Nerf missile at the champions, so at least they haven't forgotten that they earned the right to challenge for the titles. Tegan and Shotzi had gotten a whole bunch of wins over Natty and Tamina, and they never got their title match. So at least they haven't completely forgotten about that, the way that apparently that long tag team gauntlet we sat through for half of Raw a few weeks ago, where Lashley and MVP earned the right to challenge for the Raw tag team titles, that's forgotten about. That's just a distant memory. MVP was like, fuck this, I'm going to go get my knee fixed, so he's going to be off TV for a while. The gauntlet took up literally half of this 3-hour show, and it ended up meaning not a damn thing. But at least here, it looks like Tegan and Shotzi will at some point be getting a championship match. Hey, maybe they'll throw that on the kickoff show tonight. Maybe that'll be the kickoff match. At the end of Raw, they gave away a triple threat match between Roman Reigns, Big E, and Bobby Lashley, the Universal Champion, the WWE Champion, and the former WWE Champion. No advance notice beyond just a few segments earlier in the show. Vince McMahon apparently only made the decision at noon that day that, hey, let's do this match. Apparently they were doing it on some of the house shows. The reports were positive. People were really into it. The matches were really good. And he said, let's just throw it on the show tonight. Even though they already had this huge match that they had already announced between the Bloodline and the New Day, they did that at the beginning of the show, and then they gave this away at the end. I mean, at least they announced in advance, a few days before, that they were giving us the Bloodline and the New Day. But they went and they blew through this match as well. That I can't defend. I've said recently, I've actually stood up for the fact that, you know, they were announcing the Money in the Bank cash-in in advance. They announced Bloodline and New Day, which I would have loved to have seen at Survivor Series. But you know what? I was like, hey, they want to give it to us on Raw? Go ahead. Anything they could do to spice up the show because the show is awful, go for it. This I can't defend as far as just throwing this match away like this. But I can say that these three guys, they had a hell of a fucking match. Great main event this week. This could have been a main event on any pay-per-view. They gave them time. They gave them 20 minutes in this match. All three men had a chance to shine. Lashley finally got fed up. He brought a chair into the ring to break up a pin attempt on Roman Reigns. Of course, no DQ in triple threat matches. But after he hammered Big E with the chair a few times, he got caught by a spear by Roman Reigns, and he got pinned. They need to be careful before they burn through all of their big matches that they have left. Because they don't have it, you know, when people talk about WWE and AEW and all the whataboutism, you know, if you're going to criticize one, you have to criticize the other. I'll say this, and the difference between WWE and AEW when it comes to giving away big matches on TV, with all the new names they've brought in recently, coupled with the people who are already on their roster, AEW has far more fresh matches that they can burn through over a longer period of time than I am seeing when I look at that WWE roster. So even if AEW was doing the same thing and they were burning through all these matches, they got a lot more of them than WWE does. And also keep in mind, they have 4 pay-per-views a year. WWE has one every single month. 12 of them Sometimes more. If there's a Saudi Arabia show in a month where they have another pay-per-view. Next month, I think the Saudi show, I think, is the only one, which is unusual. But AEW has four pay-per-views a year. So you can't save all the big matches for those shows because it'll take you 5 years to get through all of them. But WWE has to be careful here. Because they are burning through these things like nothing. Now, before Raw, there was news even before Monday Night Raw went on the air on Monday night. Keith Lee had yet another dark match as they try to figure out what to do with this man. I don't know why it is so difficult to figure out how to use somebody like Keith Lee. But apparently it is. And now they're trying out a new nickname for him. He was announced to the ring as Keith Bearcat Lee. They should just cut out the cat and call him Bear Lee, as in we barely get to see him on television. Now, I don't know if they gave him the name or if they told him, hey, go come up with some name yourself. We want to give you a nickname. And this is his way of paying tribute to Bearcat Wright, the same Bearcat Wright I just talked about last month in one of the This Week in History segments on the podcast. Remember, I talked about how Ron Simmons, a lot of times people think of Ron Simmons as the first black world champion in pro wrestling, which is not true. It was Bearcat Wright. He beat Fred Blassie to win the WWA World Championship. WWA was not a major promotion. It was basically an outlaw promotion after they broke away from the NWA, but this was back in the 60s. So Bearcat Wright is a fairly big name in wrestling history. He has his place in history. He's the first black champion. So if it's a tribute to him, I mean, that's nice and all. And I know in NXT, when he would give someone the big double chop to the chest, they would refer to it as his big bear paws. But this is just one of those changes that just feels like it's change for the sake of change. Why is this man toiling away in dark matches still? You know, at first I thought it was maybe the residual effects from COVID and he, you know, which almost killed him. And even he talked about in that video that he posted when he revealed that it was COVID that kept him out for all these months and how scary things got. He even said, you know, he's not really back in full ring shape yet. He's still working on it. And so maybe that has something to do with it. It's been a few months now. Maybe they're still letting him get back in ring shape. I don't know. It feels to me like they just don't know what the fuck to do with this guy. There is nothing wrong, and there is nothing wrong with his name. But we have a draft coming up. And that would be a great time to draft him to one show or the other and get him back on TV. Now, there was another dark match. This one before SmackDown on Friday with Shane Thorne, formerly Slapjack, or Slapdick, depending on what you called him when he was in Retribution, doing what looks to be a Crocodile Dundee, or maybe the Crocodile Hunter, type of gimmick. Now, before people jump all over WWE for this, he did go on Twitter, and he claims that it was his idea. He says he came up with the idea himself. He was inspired by Nikki A.S.H. And all the success that Nikki A.S.H. has had with her superhero gimmick on Raw, he decided he wanted to become the next Crocodile Dundee, apparently. All I can say is, it can't be any worse than fucking Slapjack. Anything else would be an upgrade from that. Now, the only other things of note from SmackDown on Friday was Baron Corbin. He has a new talk show called Happy Talk with Happy Corbin. Happy Corbin is basically King Corbin, but without the crown. I miss bum-ass Baron Corbin, as Pat McAfee used to call him. I thought he was far more entertaining as the broken homeless guy on TV. I miss Baron Corbin when he was broke. But anyway, Kevin Owens comes out during this segment, and he's coming down the aisle, and all of a sudden he gets jumped by a guy in a hoodie who reveals himself to be Riddick Moss, who is back on TV. Now, some of you may be asking, who? Who is Riddick Moss? Good question. We saw him last during those Raw Underground segments last year. He tore his ACL last September. He's been out of action for an entire year, and now he is back, and he is all chummy with Happy Corbin. So I guess the two of them are going to be linked up together. Kevin Owens will be wrestling Riddick Moss probably on TV this week. And they are building to an eventual match with Naomi and Sonya Deville. Naomi was there for a match. Sonya came out and said, nope, this is not happening. So Naomi challenged her to a match instead, and Deville said, no, I'm management. I am not a wrestler anymore. And then she had security escort Naomi to the back. So clearly this is building to an eventual match between the two of them. Outside of that, and there was a good match between Apollo Crews and Shinsuke Nakamura that Nakamura won when he retained his Intercontinental title, but nothing else really on that show to speak of. That's pretty much the highlights there. What I want to do here, because I did mention the draft is coming. Now, we all know the draft, in the end, it's not going to mean much. All you're doing is just you're taking the same pieces and moving them around. So what the overall impact of this is even going to be? You know, I was going to do like a whole draft special, and then I said, what's the fucking point? Really? Because I'm putting more thought and effort into this than WWE does half the time. But I did want to just come up with a few moves here and run them by you here. So the draft starts on Friday on SmackDown. It will then extend into a second night on Raw next Monday. I might actually go live on YouTube after that. And what we'll do on Friday this week is we will turn the Friday night stream into another double stream like we did a few weeks ago after the Madison Square Garden show. And so I'll recap night one of the draft, and then we'll go into AEW Rampage. So it starts on Friday, and these are the draft moves that I think are realistic. I mean, I could see these moves happening, and these are some of the moves that I would make. Because I don't really want to blow up SmackDown. SmackDown, compared to Raw lately, for the most part, has been the A show. I don't want SmackDown to get blown up and screwed here. I don't think they will. I don't think Fox would be very happy if they did that. So I don't think SmackDown is losing anyone of any great value in their eyes. Like the biggest stars, I don't see Roman Reigns or even Brock Lesnar. I don't think guys like that are going to be moving. But maybe the biggest name that I do see moving, and I think it would be the right move for him, is Drew McIntyre. I think Drew McIntyre, he's taken a lot of losses recently, and that's okay. If the plan is to move him to a different brand and give him a new start, then it doesn't matter. Let him put over some people on his way out. And that's what I think is happening here. I think Drew McIntyre goes from Raw to SmackDown. That is a move that I would make. Jeff Hardy is an interesting name, because Jeff Hardy seems like he has passed his peak. It doesn't seem like there is any kind of real big push in the cards for Jeff Hardy at this point. The way that he's been handled by WWE demonstrates to me that they don't really see him in that role anymore. He has been added to the U.S. title match tonight at Extreme Rules. I would be surprised to see him walk out with the championship. Not impossible, but I'm not expecting him to walk away with the win. In fact, I think he was probably added to take the loss. But I think Jeff Hardy goes from Raw to SmackDown is a move that I would make. And the main reason I would move him from Raw to SmackDown, besides the fact that he is just, you know, a fish swimming upstream with nowhere to go on Monday nights, I still think that Jeff Hardy has one last big program in him. I didn't say run. I didn't say I would give him the championship. But I think that between now and WrestleMania, like, we know Roman is going to finish things out with the Demon. We know that he's going to face Brock Lesnar next month. Survivor Series will be him against whoever the champion is on Raw, probably Big E. What happens then from that December to April period leading up to WrestleMania? And we still don't even know what the WrestleMania match is going to be. Is it going to be The Rock? Probably not. Is it going to be a rematch with Brock Lesnar? That seems marginally more likely than The Rock does at this point. But Roman is going to need more people to beat. He is going to need more people to work with between Survivor Series and WrestleMania. So who could that be? Who could be that babyface that the crowd loves so much and so badly wants to see win and get one last run with the championship? His name is Jeff Hardy. I think you move Jeff over to SmackDown. He starts winning matches for a change. And you build him up just enough where in December, or at the Royal Rumble in January, maybe even into February. You can get two or three matches out of it. He has a program, possibly his last big program of his career, singles program, with Roman Reigns. And he does not win the Universal Championship, but he could face Roman, he could contend for it, and I think the people like Jeff Hardy enough, and they want to see him do well. People were appalled when they saw him come out a few weeks ago in the Brigade of Jobbers for the 24/7 belt. People still like Jeff Hardy. He's not the same, you know, he's older, he's more, you know, broken down. Injuries, I think, have taken their toll. But, you know, he could still go, and he still has a very loyal fan base. He's one of those rare baby faces who sort of, he connects with the audience in a different way. And he's been around for so long, and I think people would love to see him get one last shot at the championship. He would be a great person for Roman Reigns to beat. Feed him to Roman Reigns. Build him up first, but feed him to Roman Reigns. So I would move Jeff from Raw to SmackDown. Kevin Owens is another name, and we've talked about Owens and what his future may or may not hold. His contract is going to be up at the end of January, January 31st. He will be a free agent if he does not re-sign before then with WWE. He could very well be AEW bound. He has a lot of friends in AEW. And I'm going to mention the Owen Hart stuff here in a little bit when I talk about all the AEW news. He's a huge Owen Hart fan. You hear it in his name. Named his son after him. I would think that maybe the appeal of possibly being able even to participate in something like that might draw him in away from WWE to AEW. So we don't know for sure what his future is going to hold, other than he's at least going to be around a few more months. But every year, Kevin Owens seems to be in this rut where he is in need of a fresh start. And he was quoted in that Bleacher Report interview last year that I read on the podcast last week, where he said, every year I switch brands. I think it's been a few years in a row. He always switches brands. It always feels like, man, I need to switch brands and go from Raw to SmackDown to get a fresh start. He goes from Raw to SmackDown. Maybe he gets a little bit of a push, and then he falls in the cracks and feels like, well, I need another fresh start. He goes from SmackDown to Raw. Rinse, repeat. This has played itself out multiple times over the years. And now he's kind of back in that same spot again. But as I look at the Raw roster, I think to myself, if Big E is going to be the WWE champion for a while, they're going to need some solid heels for him to step into the ring with. Kevin Owens has been doing the babyface thing for a long time now. Kevin Owens is a better heel, in my opinion, than a babyface. We've seen vicious heel Kevin Owens. It's been a while since we've seen him. I know people like him, but I think the timing is right, not only for him to switch brands, but for him to go heel. And you can get some Big E Kevin Owens matches for the championship. Kevin Owens from SmackDown to Raw is a move that I would make. Ricochet, another name. I don't know what he's been up to. Probably hanging out on Main Event. A waste of talent. If anybody can benefit from a change of scenery, I think it's someone like Ricochet. I would send him from Raw to SmackDown like Kevin Owens. I think he needs a fresh start. Now, let me float this, and this is not something I think people are going to be very enamored with. I'm not happy with this idea either, but I put this out there because I think it's possible, because it is WWE that we're talking about here. I talked about what we saw on Friday on SmackDown with the Street Profits. Angelo Dawkins wasn't there, wherever he was. Montez Ford had a match with Roman Reigns. He had a very impressive showing. I have said that of the two members of the Street Profits, Angelo Dawkins is very good, but he is not Montez Ford. When I look at the two of them, who do I think has the bigger upside as a single? By far, it is Montez Ford. He is going to be a single star at some point in the, we'll say in the future. I don't want to say the not too distant future, we'll say in the future. But maybe that future is coming a lot quicker than we all think. I mean, hell, maybe that match we saw on Friday was something of a test to see how he does. If it was, I think he passed with flying colors. And what worries me about that is now we have a draft coming up. WWE has broken up tag teams before in the draft. I mean, they've broken up tag teams even without a draft. I'm not saying that I would even entertain the idea of doing this right now, but it's not as if WWE has not split up tag teams in the past. It is their favorite fetish, breaking up tag teams for no good reason. They even broke up the Dudleys, I think, in one of these drafts many years ago, and then they realized what a stupid mistake that was, and they ended up putting them right back together. But you don't have to go back 20 years. You could just look in the last 6, 12, 18 months at teams that they have broken up for no reason. So I tell you, just keep that in mind here. We could very well see the Street Profits split up in this draft, and if that happens, Montez Ford stays wherever Bianca Belair is. He'll be on that brand. He'll stay on SmackDown. Angelo Dawkins goes to Raw. If that happens, that is it. That's curtains for Angelo Dawkins. If you're Angelo Dawkins right now, you do not want to hear this. You do not want to hear anybody talking about this idea, even as a possibility. Because he is the one who is going to draw the short straw in that arrangement if and when the Street Profits get split up. Which they will at some point. But if it happens this week, that is the beginning of the end for him. He will end up much the way Tucker did when they split up Otis and Tucker. Cesaro. He had his push earlier this year, his first pay-per-view main event, challenging for a world championship, or I guess in this case, a universal championship. I guess the universe is technically bigger than the world. And we haven't really seen much of him since the Seth Rollins feud was over. We haven't seen much of him on television. I think, and again, it almost feels like a lateral move here. I don't see him going to Raw and getting a much bigger push, but I think he would benefit from going from SmackDown to Raw. I would move Cesaro over to Mondays. Apollo Crews and Commander Aziz. Apollo Crews had the Intercontinental Championship for a while. I like the way he reinvented himself. He's very good. But especially after that loss to Nakamura on TV this week, where he did not regain his Intercontinental title. I question what his future looks like on SmackDown. I don't think it looks very bright. I think Cruz and Aziz can be moved over from SmackDown to Raw. And then I look at NXT. NXT, I don't believe, is technically part of this draft. So for example, you're not going to have Raw or SmackDown people being drafted to NXT. I do think that we will see some NXT talent moving to the main roster as part of this draft, as early as this Friday. And the three names that stand out to me and the three names that I think are ready to make that move, of course, I always worry about their future, but the one I'm least concerned about is LA Knight. LA Knight, I mean, he's not a spring chicken anymore. If they're going to move him, the time to move him is now. The time to move him is not a year from now, 2 years from now. The time is now. And I look at what they did to him on NXT recently when he lost to Bron Breakker, and then later that night he lost again. And I'm thinking, what the fuck are they doing with this guy? And like McIntyre on Raw, it felt to me like maybe they're just using him to get this new guy over, and it doesn't matter because he's going to be leaving NXT soon. I hope he is. I think LA Knight has all the tools that he needs to be a success on Raw or SmackDown. I can't imagine Vince McMahon doesn't look at this guy and listen to him on promos and not smile and think, boy, I could sure use a guy like this. So I think LA Knight is on the move, and I think LA Knight goes from NXT to Monday Night Raw. I think Raw could really use him. Austin Theory has dropped little hints that he might be finishing up with NXT. He's had a bunch of dark matches recently. See, LA Knight has not had dark matches. But Austin Theory has had a whole bunch of them. And they would only do that if they were interested in seeing more of him before he makes the move. I think Austin Theory makes the move from NXT to SmackDown. And then on the women's side, Dakota Kai. Last few weeks has kind of dropped off the face of the earth after she lost to Raquel Gonzalez, who has now moved on. Raquel is going to be defending against Frankie Monet on TV this week. Dakota Kai has had some dark matches as well as a babyface. I think that she's going to be moving from NXT. I think Dakota Kai, the place for her to go is Raw. And the reason I think it's Raw, which could use her, but I think it's because SmackDown has gotten a whole bunch of women from NXT the last few times. They got Tegan Knox, they got Shotzi Blackheart, and most recently, they got Toni Storm. So unless any or all of them are moving in the draft, they're all on SmackDown. You got to give someone to Raw to beef up the women's division there. I think that person is Dakota Kai. Keith Lee, as I said before, it is time to re-debut him on television. Unless he is physically, medically not ready, it is time to get him back on television. He is technically still part of the Raw brand. So that is where he should be. Hopefully we will see Keith Lee reappear on television by next Monday and get him going again. And then one other name I'll throw out there, and I really don't give a shit where he ends up. You could send him back to NXT. Is Elias. What happened to Elias? They were running vignettes on Raw. Remember him in the graveyard with the tombstone. Elias, rest in peace, 2017 to 2021. The new Elias is coming. We haven't seen a vignette in over a month. Maybe he really is dead. So maybe he'll reappear suddenly and he'll be drafted to one show over the other, but I'd be lying if I said I really cared as far as which brand he ends up on. Maybe he'll reappear on TV as a totally different person and I'll start to gain interest in watching Elias matches, but to me it's run its course. He's kind of in that Jackson Ryker category where I don't really care where he ends up. I'm just puzzled by the fact that we had all these videos. It's like the Toni Storm thing all over again. Toni Storm debuts on television. We don't see her for 5 weeks, 6 weeks. Is she alive? Did she have a visa issue? Did she get lost? Should we be putting posters up around the neighborhood? I don't know. Thankfully, she's back. But maybe we'll see Elias reappear on TV this week. So those are my draft moves. We shall see how things play out. But as is the case with the draft, you know, at the end of the day, you're just moving puzzle pieces around from one puzzle to the next. What you do with those pieces, of course, is always the most important thing. And I don't know that things are really going to be all that different. It's not a bad thing to give each show a fresh coat of paint every now and then. But what matters is what you do with those pieces once you have moved them into place. The biggest week in AEW history is in the books with both Grand Slam shows from Arthur Ashe Stadium in New York City. Dynamite on Wednesday was the better of the two shows, but you put both of them together and those 4 hours would make for one of the best pay-per-views all year. They announced the crowd on TV as 20,177, but WrestleTix on Twitter estimates just over 19,000 tickets were distributed for the show, with most of the luxury suites going unused. And I trust WrestleTix. They put a lot of work and effort into what they do and all the reporting and all the, you know, ticket-related matters for all these different promotions. If they say that AEW fell short of 20,000, then they probably fell short of 20,000. But that doesn't change the fact that it was still the highest attended AEW event in its history, and it was the highest attendance for a non-WWE wrestling event in North America since WCW brought Nitro to the Georgia Dome in July of 1999. It's not bad for a two-year-old company that's never run the New York market before. The stadium folks were said to be over the moon with the show, and they want AEW back soon. It sounds like AEW looks at it maybe as an annual thing, so they're not going to be going back so fast. I was saying on my Rampage stream, I would love for AEW's next New York City trip to be not Arthur Ashe, not even Madison Square Garden. Even though I have no doubt after what they did here, they could sell out Madison Square Garden. I don't think there could be any debate about that now. Now, it might depend on the card that they put together. If they were just bringing a regular Rampage to MSG, would they sell it out? Probably the first time in the building they would. And then after that, they would have to put together an appealing card. But I don't think we can question whether or not AEW would have the ability to pack in a 14 or 15,000 seat building now that they've done it two different times. They did it in Chicago at the United Center, and they did it here in New York. So they have established that they can fill the bigger buildings. They run a lot of smaller venues, but they can fill the bigger buildings. And one day they'll do a true stadium show. No Arthur Ashe Stadium, but I'm talking about a stadium that fits 30 or 40,000 people. I don't know that they can fill it up today, but do I think they could get 20, 25,000, maybe even a little bit more into a bigger stadium? I do. And they will. In time. But what I was saying on the stream is that for their next New York City trip, I would love for it to be to the Hammerstein Ballroom. It's a small venue. It fits a lot less than 20,000 people. And it's a hard venue to do television. I've heard all the horror stories about WWE taping television there, and it's just a crappy building as far as logistically taping television. I get that. But I just love how intimate it comes across. Doing Dynamite there 1 week and taping Rampage from the Hammerstein, I think would be a lot of fun. Kenny Omega and Bryan Danielson had one of the best matches that you will ever see on television, with a finish that left things open for a rematch. As I predicted, they went to a draw. I said it would be a 20-minute draw, figuring that that's what they do, 20-minute draws. They went 30 minutes. Didn't feel like 30 minutes. It was 30 minutes that felt like 20 minutes. That match flew by. Just two of the very best at what they do, tearing the house down with a molten hot crowd. Everything just fell into place. It was so much fun to watch that match. If Hangman Page is not coming back soon, they could have Danielson fight through members of the Elite to get to Omega in a rematch at Full Gear in November for the championship. He could wrestle Matt Jackson on TV. He could beat Matt Jackson and move on to Nick Jackson and beat him. Nick Jackson had that great match on television months ago against Phoenix. I think a singles match on TV with Nick Jackson and Daniel Bryan, or Bryan Danielson, would be fantastic. He could wrestle Adam Cole and possibly beat him. Get the match with Omega in November and then lose. And then you can do the Hangman Page match at Revolution. You know, when I did my last members only Q&A video on YouTube earlier this week, I mapped out the next few AEW champions. And I mapped it out like this. The title goes from Omega to Hangman, from Hangman to MJF, from MJF to CM Punk, because I think that would be just a fantastic program. I think just the TV segments alone would be fantastic. And then from CM Punk, and maybe that's a year from now, year and a half, 2 years from now. You know, AEW likes to give these guys some length to their title runs. But from Punk, it goes to Darby Allin. You come full circle with it, back to those two, and this time Punk puts Darby over. And then maybe the title goes from Darby to Malakai Black. I mean, I like that there's so many different ways they could go with it. There's so many different faces. You could say almost too many. They have so many faces on the roster. There's a lot of viable options they have on who to build around and who to, you know, put the belt on and what dream matches they want to do. You know, dream matches for the AEW audience. They would say that a lot of these to them are dream matches. They have a lot of options on the table. But that's how I would consider mapping it out. I'm not married to it being just those people, but I just did a little look ahead and I said, you know what? The next 2 to 3 years of AEW champions, I think, could be mapped out just like that. But they did indeed have the balls, as I was hoping they would. Not even so much the balls, but just the common sense. To have Malakai Black beat Cody Rhodes a second time. Even though he spit mist in Cody's face, he had to cheat to get the win. He is a heel. New York City was not kind to Cody or Brandy. So we have Brandy back on TV this week with him. It looked like a heel turn could be in the works. Maybe it is. I mean, Arn Anderson on Busted Open Radio talked about the fans possibly resenting Cody for going Hollywood. Look at this. Hollywood Cody Rhodes. He compared it to when John Cena, who was always Mr. WWE, started doing movies, how the fans may have felt betrayed by that. They throw their support behind these guys, he said, and then they leave. He thinks the fans might feel slighted a little bit by that. The reason that I didn't fully lean into the idea when I was talking about this on Wednesday night, about this possibly being the start of a Cody heel turn, is because it was New York. And in New York, you never know what kind of reaction you're going to get. It's not necessarily the same reaction you're going to get in most other cities. And this was the first time that Cody Rhodes really got booed, like the way that he was in New York. And Cody also responded on Twitter and he said, Double A can do and say whatever he wants. That's the reason he's the coach. Nothing but love. But my outside commitments did not get me the L. Dude spit in my face and stacked me with the pin. No excuses. So if this is a heel turn, it looks like they're going to take their time with it. That's why I said pump the brakes. People assuming this is going to definitely be a heel turn. I don't know that it's definitely going to be a heel turn. See, the problem with Cody, and I think this goes to the reaction that he got. The problem with Cody has been that he has had nothing of any real substance to do on television for a long time. He does come back and then leave again and come back and leave again. And I don't know that it's resentment. I mean, I don't know why anybody would resent him for doing that. Just like, why would you resent John Cena? If John Cena got a movie role and he wanted to go take it and film the whatever movie it was and then come back, you know, why would you resent him for that? I never really understood the logic behind that. I think these people, these fans, they take it too seriously. But that part of it is the fact that he hasn't really had anything of any great substance to do. But I also think part of the issue may be the stipulation they did 2 years ago when he lost to Chris Jericho at Full Gear. And he said that if he didn't win that match, he would never be allowed ever to challenge again for the AEW championship. And he lost. Now, we all expect that they will find a way at some point around that stipulation. But they have stayed true to that stip for almost 2 years now. So Cody does not really have anything to fight for. He can talk about all the TNT title meant the world to me and all of that stuff. But at the end of the day, you go for the world championship. That's what everybody strives to go for, right? Is the top title in the company. And he is technically not allowed to fight for it. He's not allowed to challenge for it. So it feels like he does not have anything to fight for. This is pretty much as good as it's going to get for him. And I think that hurts him a little bit. Sting and Darby, they beat FTR in a crowd-pleasing match on this show. Sting was doing things in the ring at 62 that I think are just very impressive to see him doing. It's very cool. And they ended the show on Wednesday with Britt Baker winning over Ruby Soho. They made the call because it was the only title match on the entire show. And the title goes on last. That, and they probably wanted to make sure that Omega and Danielson, since they had to go the full 30 minutes in their match, they wanted to make sure they didn't run out of time at the end of the show, because TNT has a hard stop at 10 p.m. There is no Dynamite overrun. So that probably had a lot to do with it as well. The show did not set the all-time record viewership for AEW. I thought it would, with the way they stacked that card and promoted it. And they fell short. 1.273 million viewers on Wednesday. It was still good enough for their third highest viewership ever. I don't want to make it sound like it's a bad number or TNT is unhappy with the number. I thought it was disappointing, considering all of the hype that was around it and what they were offering. I thought it was a disappointing number. Warner is obviously very pleased overall with the numbers for AEW, because we also learned this week, we now have a date. We know when Dynamite is moving off TNT to TBS, January 5th, 2022. But we also learned that Rampage, which was supposed to be changing channels as well and going from TNT to TBS, is in fact not going to TBS. Rampage is going to stay right where it is Friday nights on TNT. TNT officials were said to be surprised with how well the show has done in what is basically a death spot. 10 p.m. on Friday nights. That's why I often say everything is relative. The Rampage numbers may be going down each week, but they're still doing far better, multiples better, than whatever TNT was airing in that slot previously. The only question is, will they expand the show permanently to 2 hours like they did this week? Or are they going to keep it at 1 hour? Me personally, my personal preference as somebody who has to stream right after, I hope they keep it to the 1 hour format. I just think it's a lot easier to watch a 1 hour show. They have the 2 hours on Wednesday, 1 hour on Friday, plus all the YouTube stuff they do. And let's be honest, I mean, not every week is going to be loaded the way it was this week. We don't see a lot of Rampage cards that look like the one that we got this week. This week was a special event, so you put on a special show, 2 hours, no problem. Does it need to be 2 hours every week? I mean, they have a very bloated roster. It's not like they don't have enough people to put on the show. I don't think the show needs to be 2 hours every week. But Friday was a fun show, too. It was more subdued than the show from Wednesday. It was taped right after the show on Wednesday that we saw. Powerhouse Hobbs had his best match to date. He lost to CM Punk in Punk's first match on television since January 20th, 2014. He wrestled Billy Gunn on Monday Night Raw. Missed opportunity to have him feud with the Gunn Club instead of Team Taz and recreate the match here. Not that I actually would have wanted to see that. I'm just saying, if they wanted to recreate the match, it just so happens that CM Punk and Billy Gunn are once again back on the same roster. To be honest, I'm not even sure why Punk was wrestling Billy Gunn on Raw even back then, in 2014. Adam Cole and the Young Bucks back together again as the Super Click beat Christian Cage and Jurassic Express. We are getting Cole against Jungle Boy on Dynamite this week. Adam Cole was on Talk is Jericho, and he talked about the very nice, very cordial meeting that he had with Vince McMahon before he left, when they were still hoping to keep him, and they were trying to come up with ideas for him on the main roster. And he revealed, publicly, for the first time, that one of the ideas they pitched to him was to possibly change his name, and that they might also want to change his look. And he admitted that it scared him a little bit, because he spent 14 years of his life as Adam Cole. Of course it scared him. He had every right to be scared. This is the same company that just gave us Braun Breaker and Von Wagner on television. These are the names that these people come up with. The same company that gave us Shorty G, Dolph Ziggler, Husky Harris, Michael McGillicuddy, because Vince McMahon wanted a strong Irish name. That was the story that Joe Hennig heard about how he got his name. He heard that they were on the plane. They were on the corporate jet one day. They were talking about different things. And Vince McMahon, I want a strong Irish name. Yes, because Michael McGillicuddy is the first name that springs to mind when I think of strong Irish names. These people shouldn't be allowed to name their own children, let alone anyone else. Adam Cole came this close to being called Professor Von Shiznit and given a fucking monocle to wear like Mr. Peanut. I would say he averted disaster. In their later conversation, he said that they could tell he wasn't too keen on that idea, so they seemed more open to allowing him to keep his name. But he called it a red flag. Oh, I'd call it a red flag. I'd call it a red flaming flag with flames shooting up into the air and sirens going off. That's what I would call it. He said, I feel like a big part of what made me work is that, you know, I'm not 6'3". I'm not 285 pounds. So the Adam Cole Bebe and the Boom and all that stuff is such a big part of what I do and how I connect with the audience, aside from the wrestling and the promos and stuff like that. I feel like it would have been quite the challenge if that would have happened, as far as the name change goes and stuff like that, to build myself back up. So he shared a lot of the same concerns that we did as fans of his work. He's not a dumb person. There's a reason why he left, even though he seemed to like everybody there. And I know he loved working with Shawn Michaels and he loved working with Triple H, and I think Triple H did well by him in NXT, but the main roster is a totally different beast. And he was smart enough to see the writing on the wall, that plus the Twitch stuff, which he talked about again, and that was enough for him to just cut bait and leave. But then Jericho brought up the reports online about the pitch for him to be a heel manager for Keith Lee. And I wanted to address this here because I got some tweets from people this week saying, are you going to correct the false report from Dave Meltzer now that it's been proven false, since Adam Cole in another interview said that he hadn't heard that idea, that it was never pitched to him. Somehow people took this as confirmation that the whole report was fake. It was fake news, and it never happened. The reason I'm not correcting it is because there is nothing to correct. Just because the idea wasn't pitched to Adam Cole directly does not mean that the idea was not pitched in a creative meeting. Lots of ideas never make it to the talent until they are greenlit. And that is if they even happen at all. Most of these ideas probably never even make television. Adam Cole never disputed that it happened. He said, well, nobody ever actually presented it to me. But that doesn't mean that it didn't happen. It's just that people are very quick to discredit anything that Meltzer reports because they are obsessed. Dave Meltzer is not right all the time. He does get shit wrong. He is not infallible. But I would like to see all of these people who were tripping over themselves, calling it fake and crying that Adam Cole, see, he said it wasn't true, even though he never did. Let's see what these people have to say now that Cole has confirmed, in his own words, that one idea they had was to change his name, which is something Meltzer also mentioned in that very same initial report in The Observer, that they might want to change Adam Cole's name. Because now we know that that's true because he confirmed it. Or are you calling Adam Cole a liar? Is he a liar too now? You can't say Dave's report was false, except this one part of, you know, that part he's telling the truth. This other stuff he's not, but this part he's telling the truth. That other part he's making up. Which is it? Is it made up or is he telling the truth? You're not going to hear anything from these people. You know why? Because it doesn't fit their narrative. That's why. Friday, the main event on Rampage, they did a lights out match to end the show. Jon Moxley and Eddie Kingston getting a win over Minoru Suzuki and Lance Archer. We had a cameo from Homicide, who was wrestling Suzuki that night, because this was a tape show, live that same night at the GCW show in Queens, the same place, just a different building. Homicide was wrestling Minoru Suzuki one-on-one. And when I learned about this weeks ago, if you remember, the idea that I floated for Rampage, or, well, I didn't know it was going to be on Rampage, but for the Arthur Ashe show, I figured if Eddie Kingston is going to be doing something else, like wrestling Miro maybe for the TNT title in a rematch, Moxley and Homicide, you bring Homicide in for a cameo, he'll get over big in New York. People know who he is. I mean, the AEW fans do. And let them wrestle Suzuki and Archer. And they went with Kingston instead, but we got Homicide. We did get Homicide on the show after all. So that was nice to see him there. Jake Roberts. I mentioned Lance Archer here. One person we have not seen on AEW television, conspicuous by his absence over the past several weeks, is Jake the Snake Roberts. And I've had some people ask, where is Jake? And I commented on this on the stream the other night, and I thought it had to do with, maybe his COPD. He was spotted recently in a wheelchair and he had the oxygen tank with him because he's got breathing issues. Well, now we have a further update on exactly why Jake has been out and when he is going to be back. This comes from bodyslam.net. Cassidy Haynes spoke to sources about Jake's recent health issues and was told that he has been absent from AEW television after undergoing foot surgery to have pins inserted into some of his toes. And he has since been cleared by doctors to return, and so we could be seeing him back on AEW television any week now. He already signed a new deal with them. I think it was a new 2-year deal just a few months ago, so whether he comes back this week or a few weeks from now, Jake is signed. He's not going anywhere. But that is why he has been missing. He had foot surgery, and apparently he is on his way back. Andrew Zarian of the Matt Men podcast reported that there is a new championship coming to AEW very soon. It is not a trios title, not yet. Those are coming. I assure you, we will be getting trios titles by next year in AEW. But this will be a secondary women's championship that will likely have TBS branding. So it might actually be called the TBS title. So they would have a TNT title. They would have a TBS title. Let's hope they never move to TV Land. If they ever switch networks, let's hope they don't move there. TV Land or Nick at Night or anything like that. That would be weird. We had one of those titles. But the coolest story of the week came on Monday with the announcement that AEW and the Owen Hart Foundation will be collaborating to honor the legacy of Owen Hart. As part of the partnership, AEW is going to be launching the annual Owen Hart Cup tournament, which will see the winner receive a cup known as the Owen, as well as new Owen Hart merchandise, including action figures, posters, t-shirts, and Owen as a playable character in the upcoming AEW console video game. That is very cool. And it's nice to see his family embrace his wrestling background. They shunned it for so long, not because they wanted to erase his past, which it certainly seemed that way for a while, but not because they wanted to erase his past, but because they did not want to have anything to do with WWE. They did not want to do business with WWE. They did not want WWE to further profit off of him and off of his legacy. And you can understand why. Unless, of course, you are one of these deranged fools that I saw online this week who pitched a fit over this news or were offended because in their warped mind, WWE owns Owen Hart. And I'm not just talking about owning certain copyrights and trademarks. I mean, these people think WWE owns the man's soul. And like some psycho ex-boyfriend or girlfriend, if they can't have him, no one can. As much fun as it was to be a wrestling fan this week, I was equally embarrassed to be a wrestling fan this week. Between this and someone going and making a video seemingly in the parking lot of a fucking Dairy Queen somewhere on the side of the road, ranting about female content creators who cover pro wrestling. I mean, the cringe was strong in the community this week. The Owen Hart stuff is a nice way to honor a guy who died in the ring at a very young age. He was only 34 when he died. And he died in the most tragically unnecessary way that somebody could possibly die. It should never have happened. And his family wants nothing to do with the company that sent him to his death. Albeit accidentally. Not only sent him to his death, but then had the fucking gall to turn around and sue his widow. And they'll say, well, no, it was just a legal tactic or whatever. Doesn't matter. They sued his widow. If you can't understand why the family wouldn't want anything to do with someone like that, and you somehow take that personally, and I said this the other night, and I will repeat it again here, you need serious psychological intervention. And I hope you get the help that you need, because you are a disgrace to all wrestling fans. Some other news and notes. The G1 Climax is underway, and New Japan continues to be snake-bitten. This company just can't catch a break. Tetsuya Naito, one of the biggest stars in the company, last weekend in his opening match of the tournament against Zack Sabre Jr., who has been on a roll so far in this thing, tore the meniscus and MCL in his left knee and is out of the remainder of the tournament. They say there is no timetable for his return. All of his remaining matches will be counted as losses via forfeit, with his opponents gaining an automatic 2 points. I am way behind on a lot of the G1 matches. I did watch Tanahashi and Okada, because I will always make time to watch Tanahashi and Okada. And not the best match I've ever seen them have, but it was excellent. It's awesome. These two, I mean, it really, I don't know if you could even make any kind of comparison, if you want to call them Flair Steamboat chemistry or whatever you want to call it, but these two have had legendary matches together for years. It's been a while since I've seen the two of them in the ring together, so it kind of sort of in a way felt a little fresh, and it was just a fantastic match with Okada picking up the win. They went about half an hour, but I've heard great things about the matches with Zack Sabre has had, even the one that he had, I think, just this morning it was, with Kota Ibushi. With Shingo Takagi against Ishii from night one. So I have a lot of catching up to do. But Tanahashi and Okada I thought was fantastic. And New Japan just needs to stay the course and hope that their luck changes soon. COVID has really done a number on them and their business and their attendance. And having someone like Naito go down with an injury, if he's going to be out for any length of time, we don't know yet, but if he is, it's just another blow to this company. It's going to be a while, speaking of injuries, before we see Sami Callihan on Impact Wrestling again. He suffered a gruesome injury at their TV tapings last weekend. He has been teaming of late with his old foe, Eddie Edwards, against Moose and the former Colin Cassidy. What's he called now? W. Morrissey? Is that the name he's going by? There's no word on who he was wrestling at the time, but the injury came on a tope suicida. Out to the floor. How many times have I ranted about these dives? Something like this was inevitable. Per PW Insider, Callahan suffered a broken ankle and also broke both the tibia and fibia bones in his left leg. That sounds a lot like the injury that Sid Vicious suffered in WCW, which is the most horrific ring injury that I have ever seen. He's already undergone surgery. He is expected to be out until mid-2022 at the earliest. Best wishes to Sammy Callahan. Any injury is terrible, but that one sounds especially bad. Superstar Billy Graham is in the hospital dealing with heart issues. He wrote on Facebook that he was headed to the Mayo Clinic earlier this week. His wife, Valerie, later posted that he also had fluid buildup in his lungs, which is improving, albeit slowly. I feel like Billy Graham has been dying for 20 years now. He had a liver transplant in 2002. Then he had more liver problems later, along with his hepatitis C. And he was given 2 years to live. That's with treatment. He was given 2 years to live. That was in 2012. He's had double pneumonia, among many other issues. Now heart problems you can add to the list. But he always seems to kick out. And Deadline.com broke the news that MGM is teaming up with WWE for what they're calling a reimagined version. I hate that word, reimagined. Of the old American Gladiators show that first ran from 1989 to 1996. I have a lot of fond memories of watching American Gladiators on Saturdays on our local Fox channel, Fox 5, after WWF Superstars would end. They would go right into American Gladiators with Mike Adamly and Larry Zonka. One of the very first competition series on television. Now, of course, there's dozens of them. Maybe hundreds. This time around, they would be using WWE stars as the gladiators. It's no wonder Vince McMahon is looking to get rid of all the small indie guys and looking to bring in all the big beefy men. Why'd he get rid of Braun Strowman? He would seem like the perfect fit for something like this. But now it all makes sense why they're getting rid of all the indie guys. I can totally see Odyssey Jones as a gladiator. Karrion Kross already dresses like one on TV, so he would fit in perfectly. Mark Burnett is pitching the series to potential broadcasters, so there's no guarantee that the series actually gets picked up. Seth Rogen was part of a team that pitched an American Gladiators remake 3 years ago that went nowhere. Hulk Hogan and Layla Ali hosted a remake on NBC back in 2008. That didn't last very long. So the odds are against this A, being picked up, and B, being any kind of real success. But I like American Gladiators, so I hope it gets picked up. I'd like to see what a reimagined version might look like. ESPN is doing a 30 for 30 on American Gladiators soon. I'm going to have to check that out. I'll have to check that out right after I watch the 30 for 30 on the 1986 Mets, which I still have not watched. I am so behind on all the things that I would like to watch. But of course, I make time for Raw every single week. For all of you, I make sure I make time for Monday Night Raw. Then we have SmackDown, we have NXT, we've got Rampage, we've got Dynamite. All the wrestling doesn't leave much time for anything else. But you guys got to make sure you leave time for this. Sports. I know that's something a lot of you are interested in. I know wrestling is the sport of kings, but if you are an NFL fan, and hopefully you're not a fan of any of the New York football teams, starting the year a combined 0-4, or you're a fan of NCAA football perhaps, BetDSI is a leader in football betting, and it is the perfect sports book for novice and professional bettors alike. You can enjoy live in-game betting, and BetDSI has been paying winners for 20 years. With a 10,000 plus betting option daily on all the sports you love to watch, live casino and daily fantasy. Use your sports and pop culture knowledge to make some extra cash this week. BetDSI has a user-friendly interface and mobile site that is very easy to use. betting options for everything from the NFL and NBA to the NHL, golf, UFC, right? We just had a UFC show last night, politics, reality, esports, and more. You can bet live on every major sport through the entire game. Every play, every minute. They're top rated on betting review sites and they offer the fastest payouts in the industry. You play, you win, you get paid. It's that simple. If you want to add a little excitement to the sports that you love, I recommend BetDSI. Right now, new members get 100% bonus match using the promo code MONSTER100. That's more than double your money to start winning today. Here's what to do. Go to BetDSI.com and use promo code MONSTER100 to get this limited time 100% bonus offer to make some extra cash on the sports that you know and love. Use Bitcoin and get 100% deposit bonus on your first two deposits up to $2,000. Again, that's promo code MONSTER100. It's only a game until you bet it at BetDSI. Week 2 of NXT 2.0 was similar to Week 1. I thought it was a watchable 2 hours that featured a lot of new faces. And Rex Steiner, Rex, even though they're not calling him that, I'm going to call him that. Rex Steiner is going to be a big star. In spite of the crappy name they gave him, he is going to be a big star. They are trying to reestablish NXT while not completely alienating the people who already liked NXT and didn't think there was anything really wrong with it. So they put the championship on Tommaso Ciampa, who is someone from the old guard who people like. He's a veteran of the old guard there. He calls himself Mr. NXT. And they had Mr. NXT come out at the beginning of the show. He was surrounded in the ring by a lot of the new faces, standing there behind him, kind of to rally the troops, and talk about how he's got his title back. He's got Goldie back, the title he never actually lost. And talking about how NXT is the A show, which it most definitely is not. Not anymore. Hasn't been for a while. But he got the crowd to chant, "We are NXT," like Triple H used to do. I always thought that he did a pretty good job on promos, but this was probably the best promo I've seen Ciampa give. You know, certainly standing in the ring, very strong. I like how he always comes off as obsessed, completely obsessed with the championship, like it's the most valuable thing in the world, which it should be. That's how you should treat the championship. Then we had the parade of people interrupting. First it was Cameron Grimes, then it was LA Knight, then it was Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland. Dunne called everybody in the ring a bunch of geezers who were all afraid to throw the first punch, which Ciampa then did. I thought it was odd for him to call everybody in the ring geezers, seeing as how most of the people in the ring were young guys. So I figured it must be some kind of British slang thing, because here, if you call somebody a geezer in this country, you're calling them an old man. But from what I understand, in British slang, geezer can refer to any man. You say that to somebody over here, though, and if they're not an old fart, you're going to get some weird looks. Although I am now inclined to incorporate this word into my daily vocabulary a little bit more, just to see the look on people's faces. Like if I go over to somebody who's my age, or a little bit younger than me, and I say, "Man, you're a fucking geezer." I want to see the look on their face now. They're probably going to have a very confused look on their face and be very offended. So you learn something new every day. Either that or I'll start calling people bloke. Geezer, bloke, mate. Anyway, a giant brawl broke out. They wanted to portray that all hell was breaking loose. Nobody could control it. There was a brawl in the ring, and then it was quickly to the back, where another pull-apart brawl had broken out with Kaylee Ray and Electra Lopez and B-Fab. Back in the ring, Bron Breakker had a microphone in his hand, and as I said last week, if you closed your eyes, you would think Scott Steiner was in the ring cutting a promo. It is uncanny. Are we absolutely certain that he is Rick's son and not Scott's? I think we may need a DNA test to prove it definitively once and for all. He said to Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland, how about you two little bitches grow a set of balls and come face me and Ciampa in a match tonight? And that's how we got our main event. It's too bad Samoa Joe had to give up the title because Steiner immediately working with Joe and eyeing Joe's title and eventually wrestling Joe and calling him a fat ass would have been too perfect for words. Roderick Strong has brought the Cruiserweight Championship to Diamond Mine. This was a must. He beat Kushida with some help from his fellow Diamond Mine members. Ivy Nile, the lone female in the group, she came flying off the ring steps at one point with what looked like a Superman punch. And then back inside, Roddy hit his end of heartache backbreaker for the win. It wasn't a classic or anything that you would expect from these two if they were given time. The focus so far, these first 2 weeks of this new NXT, and I understand it because they're trying to establish so many new people all at once. The focus is very much on character development. It is not on work rate. It is not on having a great match. Even the main event last week, the four-way, when they crowned the new champion, that didn't even go 10 minutes. I mean, the action is solid, but it's a lot of character development so far these first 2 weeks, which it has to be. I mean, if they're trying to get these people established, we have to be given a reason to care, and we have to know a little bit more about who they are. Since adding the Creed brothers, though, and now Ivy Nile, it has breathed new life into Diamond Mine. Roddy had to win the title. But their celebration was cut short by yet another new face, Grayson Waller, who challenged Roddy to a title match next week, which Malcolm Bivens then accepted on Roddy's behalf. The problem with introducing so many new faces at once, it's hard to keep track of them all. Another Tony D'Angelo vignette we got on the show this week. He was by the docks this time, at night, where over the years, his uncles made a few handshake deals, or business arrangements, as he calls them. And growing up, his uncle Paulie taught him how important business was. Business and family. And now we can add his success in WWE to that list. Then he walked off. I see they took my advice from last week, when he said that the real money is in NXT. And I laughed and laughed and laughed some more. Nobody believes that. The real money is in WWE. They got a lot of money. They got that sweet Saudi money. WWE is going to make more money in one night next month when they go back to Saudi Arabia. They're going to make more money in one night than AEW is going to make on their television contract all year. It's sad, but it's true. But anyway, Tony D'Angelo is coming soon. I wonder if his Uncle Paulie was also a fan of Law & Order, the SUV. We got a vignette with Brooks Jensen and Josh Briggs telling the story of how they met at a bar, and they had what was purported to be security cam footage from said bar on that day back in July that they showed us. This is the nicest looking security camera footage I've ever seen, by the way. They bonded over people, beating people up at the bar. That was basically the gist of the story. A love story. This came across like them trying too hard to be the APA. But I can appreciate them at least giving us some background into how and why they became a tag team. Kaylee Ray had a good outing, good showcase win over newcomer Amari Miller. Dante Chen, he is the first Singaporean to set foot in a WWE ring. He got a flash win over Trey Baxter, who we saw back in the breakout tournament. When I say flash, it was under a minute. You cannot judge anything from that. But I'm worried for Baxter. He had a segment in the back later where he was all down about his loss and overcomes his real-life girlfriend, Cora Jade. She tried to cheer him up, gave him a kiss, called him a superhero. And when she walked off, he was hung up on that word. He was looking off in the distance and he was saying, superhero. And I thought, oh God, not another one. They're going to put together a whole fucking Avengers crew. We already have one wannabe superhero on my wrestling show. That's enough. We don't need another one. Watch Vince give this guy the Mighty Mouse gimmick that he wanted to give Neville. I'm telling you, they're going to put together their own Avengers or Justice League is what they're going to end up doing here. Cameron Grimes got a win over Joe Gacy, who is repackaged with a new gimmick. And that gimmick may already be a thing of the past. That gimmick became a news story this week. He wrestled in a dress shirt and slacks. He cut a promo in the ring before the match, calling the ring a safe space and how he doesn't need to use male privilege to get what he wants because he understands that life isn't fair. Grimes won with one of the best cave-ins I've ever seen him do, and then after the match, Gacy gave him a hug. And Grimes was a little freaked out, but Gacy gave him a hug, and then he walked off. WWE has since removed video of the match from their website and their YouTube channel. And they also deleted their tweets about the character, and Gacy took down some posts on his Instagram page. Now, why would they do this? What is the big deal? Well, it got mainstream attention on the Fox News website and in the New York Post, talking about WWE, quote, body slamming the woke left with this new gimmick. And it's just like, you know, must everything be tied back to politics? That is what is wrong with this fucking world. I must be out to lunch on all this stuff because I just saw it as someone pretending to be positive. Clearly, you know, you could see through it. And then at some point, he's just going to snap. Like Lloyd Braun from Seinfeld, right? Serenity now, insanity later, that type of thing. I would like to see where they go with this, but it may be over before it even had a chance to start. Electra Lopez got a quick squash win. I called this show NXT Dark Elevation last week, but with all the new gimmick changes and all the squash matches, it's like the old Superstars or Wrestling Challenge formula that they have reverted back to. They've gone all the way back to 1987 here. Only this is in front of a much smaller crowd. Legado then called out Hit Row, and while her back was turned, B-Fab attacked Electra Lopez from behind. The NXT Women's Championship match, originally scheduled for last week, has been rescheduled for this week. Coming up on Tuesday will be Frankie Monet challenging Raquel Gonzalez. You talk about learning something new. I had no idea that Raquel Gonzalez, apparently, unless this is old news and she isn't anymore, but apparently she and Braun Strowman are together. I don't even remember where I saw that, but I went fishing around after to see if it was bullshit, and apparently it's not. So you learn something new. That every week you learn something new. But there is another new woman on the show calling herself Lash LaRue. Jesus Christ. Lash Legend. Not Lash LaRue. Who is debuting a new talk show segment this Tuesday called Lashing Out. And I knew nothing about this woman, so I went fishing around, and she used to play basketball for the Seattle Storm in the WNBA. She was part of the Performance Center class last December. That was the same class with MSK and Ike Manjiro and Tyler Rust, who has since been released. She's a legitimate athlete. She's a hell of an athlete. She led her team in Mississippi State to the NCAA tournament and holds a bunch of records at Texas A&M. 439 rebounds in the 2017-2018 season were good for ninth most in SEC history. But they're going to put a microphone in her hand. We're not going to get to see her in the ring just yet. We're going to see her new talk show segment this Tuesday. Odyssey Jones won a 2-on-1 handicap squash. You would think the person at the numbers disadvantage would be the one being squashed, but that's not the case when you're 400 pounds. I love Odyssey Jones. He always looks so happy to be there, but he looks like he could kill you if he wanted to. The guy just, he oozes charisma. We had an in-ring promo from Toxic Attraction, not the Toxic Avengers, as I misspoke last week. I did crack myself up with that one, I will say, especially after visualizing what the Toxic Avengers head would look like on Mandy Rose's body. They're not just a bunch of pretty faces, they said. They want the NXT Women's Tag Team Championship. Io Shirai and Zoe Stark were interviewed backstage right after this, and they accepted their challenge for this Tuesday, so I guess it's Championship Tuesday on NXT this week. We have three titles on the line, both women's and the Cruiserweight belt. We'll all be on the line. And we ended with Bron Breakker. I'm so tempted to just call him Rex Steiner and just be done with it. And him and Tommaso Ciampa against Pete Dunne and Ridge Holland. I'd know that catch power slam anywhere. You watch Rex Steiner wrestle here. I mean, that is a Rick Steiner specialty. The catch power slam he used. He was throwing around Ridge Holland like he was nothing. And Holland is no small man. We also had Breakker applying Uncle Scott Steiner's Steiner recliner to Pete Dunne. And for someone who's only 23 years old, and he has not been wrestling very long. I mean, the earliest footage or photos that I have seen of him in the ring working was at an independent show 3 years ago. And that may have been his very first match. He is damn impressive. Kyle O'Reilly ran down to the ring and struck Holland with that billy club that he carries around with him. Revenge for taking Kyle out of the championship four-way last week. And Steiner gorilla presses Holland into a power slam for the win. They are all in on Bron Breakker, who grabbed the NXT championship and went to go hand it to Tommaso Ciampa, or not even hand it, he grabbed it, and Ciampa went to grab it away from him. He wouldn't let go. Finally, he did, and Ciampa took it away with a smile on his face, but Breakker wasn't smiling. He was staring and breathing heavily, always with the heavy breathing. They're slowly building to a championship match. I think it would be too much too soon to put the belt on him. The North American title is more, I think, tailor-made for someone like him to win first. But like I said, it's not even a full year for him into his real career outside of whatever little independent stuff he may have done before that. He's barely a year in. Just take your time. Let him grow. People like him and even Odyssey Jones, you know, who's still relatively new to this, don't rush it, because these should be the stars of the future. And too many times before, we've seen people get called up before they're ready, called up way too quickly. Some can overcome that, some can't. You've got two can't-miss prospects in these two guys. I would take my time, treat them with kid gloves. There's no reason to rush. And you'll have two guys who could potentially be main eventers for you, I think, inside of the next 3 or 4 years. Question is, are they willing to be that patient? I don't get the sense that they feel like they can wait 3 or 4 years for these guys to develop into main eventers. But this is a different kind of show now, you know, compared to what it used to be. Different does not necessarily mean bad. It just means it's different. It's different than what we have become accustomed to. The building blocks for the future are there. Not all of these people are going to make it. They're throwing so many new faces out all at once at us. I want them to slow down a bit. Focus on a good half dozen or so of them and just start fleshing out their backstories and who they are. You know, when news started to circulate about this reboot, it was said that Vince McMahon was looking for attractions. He was looking for people who could be main eventers within a few years. Bron Breakker, Odyssey Jones, as I just said, those are two of those people. I would throw Carmelo Hayes on that list. I think he's another one. This is going to be, or this could be, the core group of guys, you know, and women, whoever they end up being, that are going to be headlining main roster shows inside of a few years. But it all depends on whether or not they know what they're doing with them. I always go back to that. At the end of the day, you could have all the talent in the world, and you could very easily squander that talent if you don't know what you're doing. So let's keep our fingers crossed for their sake, for the sake of their careers. Let's keep our fingers crossed and hope that they continue down the straight and narrow path. Let's run through some mailbag questions here. We'll just do a few of them. You could always email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Simon from Great Yarmouth, England. With the new 2.0 NXT, do you think takeovers may be a thing of the past? I feel the gritty takeover shows won't fit with the newly branded NXT. I would imagine they will still hold pay-per-views, but perhaps under a different name. What do you think? They've really established that TakeOver brand. I don't know about changing the name. There will be TakeOver shows, but we will not be getting TakeOvers the way that we used to. Those TakeOver specials were always built around these stacked cards with these great wrestlers going out there and having these great matches. And again, right now, it's not about having great matches. It's about establishing all of this new talent all at the same time. And whenever they do the next TakeOver show, I don't know if it would be in November. I don't know if it would be in October. They haven't announced anything yet. I don't think TakeOvers are going away. I just think they're going to look very different. And probably not as good as we remember them being. Benjamin from Brooklyn, who is celebrating a birthday this Thursday, so happy birthday to him. I don't know if you're aware of this, but something I've discovered recently on ESPN's website, under the WWE link, they also have information, photos, and video clips of AEW. Now, if the link was labeled pro wrestling, I would understand it and it would promote any wrestling company, but it is specific to WWE. WWE has to know about this, right? I'm sure they're none too happy about it. I am aware of it. ESPN pretty much ended its relationship with WWE after the Peacock deal was made. I don't remember. They may have been part of those negotiations, and when they didn't get it, that might have been pretty much the end of the relationship between the two sides. Because they're not in bed with each other the way they were before. And yes, they probably should change the WWE link to just wrestling. You know, if they really wanted to upset WWE, then definitely list them under wrestling. That'll really annoy them. Luz Cannon Lopez dropping some Q&A this week. WWF in the year 1998. I believe I saw the Fight TV Twitter account tweet, "What was your favorite year in wrestling?" And I kept seeing everybody saying 1998 was the best year. Like you, I always say 2000 was their best year creatively. But I put 1998 in second place. What are your thoughts on the year 1998? 1998 was a fun year to be a wrestling fan because WWE was starting to really rise. WCW wasn't completely out of their minds yet. You know, Goldberg was on the rise, and that was as hot as he was ever in his entire career was in 98. They made a real star. They didn't make too many of them. But they had a real star that they made with him. And I went to, you know, a bunch of Raws. First year I ever started going to Monday Night Raw. And I think I probably went to at least two, if not three of them that year. And even just to go to a live house show. I went to one a few weeks before the Highway to Hell SummerSlam. They had a show at the Nassau Coliseum. Like, it was just fun. Just a fun time to be a fan. The buildings were packed. It was more of a teenage crowd. Obviously, the product was a lot raunchier. When you're younger, you know, you're more into that kind of stuff. I don't know that it would be the same if the product was exactly the same today. I think, you know, in a lot of ways, it would still be fun. In other ways, it might not be as fun as it was. I think I was coming up as a fan just at the right time, at the right age, you know, to really be into, you know, a lot of the stuff that was going on back then. But, you know, wrestling was hot. So not just WWE, wrestling in general was just, you know, as hot as it had ever been up to that point. Now, creatively, yes, I believe 2000 was their best year. 98 was really the kind of the meat of the Austin McMahon feud. So a lot of the segments they did in 98 centered around Austin and McMahon when he poured cement, or as Jim Ross said, cement, into his Corvette. That's another one of those Raws. I was there in the building for that. I was, again, at the Nassau Coliseum. That happened in 98. The Zamboni segment, the Zamboni incident on Raw, which is one of my all-time favorite Raw segments. People were losing their fucking minds during that segment. The ring literally moved when he crashed that Zamboni into the ring, and he jumps off and he tackles McMahon. You had a lot of segments like that in 98. So that was the peak of Austin McMahon, which is probably why it was so much fun to follow along. When Vince, yeah, Undertaker and Vince put him in the hospital, Undertaker and Kane rather, put Vince in the hospital, Dr. Austin found Vince in the hospital, and, you know, just fun. So creatively, there were highs and lows, because there was also a lot of bullshit that year that, you know, probably from the mind of Russo. for all the good stuff, you couldn't always keep away all the bad stuff, and you had beaver cleavage and just bullshit like that. So it wasn't all good. But I look back at 98 and I just think to myself, I put myself back in that headspace. And it was a really fun year to be a wrestling fan. Joe from New York. I know you're a huge Bret Hart fan. I was on the Stone Cold side of things during their feud. Recently, I heard Eric Bischoff mouth off that Bret complained and didn't do anything to get himself over in WCW. Do you think Bret was damaged goods, or did his career die in WCW because Hogan and the others would not give him a piece of the pie? Oh, Bret had a huge piece of the pie. Bret had his fill of pie, believe me. To the tune of $3 million a year. Bret didn't like Eric Bischoff. Eric Bischoff didn't like Bret Hart because he doesn't like the things that Bret has said about him. I mean, Bret Hart has called Eric Bischoff a maggot. He has called Eric Bischoff a brainless idiot. If somebody called you a maggot or a brainless idiot, you probably wouldn't like them too. And Eric has called Bret a whiny bitch. So they've gone back and forth for years now. I don't think Bret was damaged goods at all after what happened in Montreal. He was the hottest thing in wrestling there for a while. The three best things that Bret ever did in that company for all the millions of dollars that they paid him was cut a promo on El Dandy. He wrestled Chris Benoit in a tribute match to his brother. And he knocked out Bill Goldberg with a metal plate. That about sums up Bret Hart's run in WCW. Daniel from Maryland. I've been listening to the podcast since the spring of 2018. Your podcast has helped get me through a lot of boring lectures back when I was in high school. Do you think the Ruthless Aggression era is overrated? Some people have said that it is the greatest era in wrestling history, while people like myself think that it was good, but nowhere near as great as the Attitude Era and the Golden Era were. I think that the Ruthless Aggression era is rated exactly the way that it should be. I think people look back on it fondly because of the SmackDown 6 and a lot of the great talent they had, really more so on SmackDown than Monday Night Raw. I look back very fondly on that period. It was very different than the Attitude Era. You know, they've gone through phases over the years. You mentioned the Golden Era. I grew up in the Golden Era. So I have a love of the Golden Era that somebody who is a brand new fan now would not have, because they might go back and say, hey, that Macho Man guy is pretty cool, or I like the way they used to do this, or I like the way they used to film that. But I think a lot of people would probably be very bored, or they would just think it's so silly and goofy with all the cartoonish, you know, characters and everything that it would be a turnoff for them. But, you know, that's what I grew up on. I love that shit. It's one of the main reasons I still have WWE Network. It's that, and then some of the new stuff, like I enjoy the Broken Skull sessions and all that, some of the documentaries. But I'm a big fan of the classic content like that. Attitude Era, I just talked about, it was a lot of fun. You had the back and forth, the Monday Night War, people jumping left and right. You never knew what was going to happen each week. You had 10 or 11 million people watching wrestling on a Monday night in a given week. This was a weekly occurrence back then. When you got to the Ruthless Aggression era, you would fallen off the peak of the Attitude Era. Wrestling was not as hot as it used to be. The product got more serious as far as in-ring action is concerned. There wasn't as much of a focus on work rate and bringing in legitimate, like, collegiate athletes and stuff like there was, I think, later on. That's when you got guys like Brock Lesnar coming in and Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. And on SmackDown, they had Edge and Mysterio and Kurt Angle and Benoit and Lesnar. These are great athletes. These are great wrestlers. They were going in there and having kick-ass matches. It was just a different time. It was a different era. I don't think that it's rated any, you know, higher or lower than it should be. I think people look back on it exactly as it was. It's a great era of wrestling on WWE television. But was it the best era in the history of the company? No, I don't believe it was. People are going to have different opinions on that depending on when they became a fan. And Chase from Verona, Wisconsin. Buy, sell, or rent on the first three AEW World Champions. Jon Moxley, Chris Jericho, and Kenny Omega. Me personally, right? Because everybody is going to look at those three differently. I would probably... Oh, boy. First three AEW World Champions? Well, I would say Omega number one. You know, Kenny Omega has really turned into a gatekeeper for that title. And he's the belt collector. He's got championships from multiple promotions. He feels like a big league world champion. I know not everybody is a fan of his work or his shtick or his promos. His promos are not great. But I would say Omega has to be number one. I would put... Whew, that's tough. I can go either way on number two or three, to be honest with you. I would say... probably I would go Jericho number two, and then Moxley number three. Jericho was the perfect first champion for AEW. And he had some really good matches. Although I don't think he held it long. I don't think he held it as long as Moxley did. Maybe a few months less. But he was just the perfect guy to put the belt on that first time. And so I would go with Jericho at number two. Right guy at the right time in the right spot. Moxley, he had some really good matches as the champion, but I also feel like there was a period there where it was kind of like, well, you know, there's not a whole lot of, I don't know, there's not a whole lot of buzz as Jon Moxley being the champion. And there were some matches he had that, you know, weren't favorites of mine. I did like the match he had with Brody Lee. That was better than I expected it to be. The match with MJF I thought was better than I expected it to be, but that would be my list. Omega number one, Jericho number two, and Moxley I would put at number three. So we'll end it there, because I gotta go, I got a lot of other work to do here. I gotta knock out Dark Side of the Ring. That'll be up on the YouTube channel within a few hours. And I gotta get ready, because tonight it is Extreme Rules. And as soon as Extreme Rules is over, you guys know where to go, you know the drill. Head on over to YouTube. Subscribe, if you are not already a subscriber, that way when I go live, you should get the link emailed to you. You just click on that link, it'll take you right to the live chat, right to the stream, before I go live. As soon as the pay-per-view is over, we'll talk about the good, the bad, the ugly, everything in between. And then I will be back with you live on Wednesday night for my Dynamite recap, as I am each and every single week. I'll be working on more content for all of our channel members. We picked up a bunch of channel members this week. I can't tell you guys how much that means to me. Yeah, it's one thing to have the 65,000 plus subscribing to my channel, and I think that's awesome. But to have people who are willing to go the extra mile to support me and what I do and become channel members is a very cool thing. And so you'll have more content coming your way this week. You know what I'll probably do in a few days? I'll get another post up under the community tab for our members for the next Q&A. Because there's never any shortage of questions. I just did a Q&A last week. We'll probably get a post up very soon for the next one. I am working on more retro audio for our Legends tier members. That's the higher tier. RSPW Rewind, coming soon. And maybe I'll give channel members early access to that as well. So a lot of fun stuff coming up. Thank you all. I will see you tonight for Extreme Rules. Do check out Dark Side of the Ring, my recap. It will be on YouTube very shortly. Be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a great end of September. When I'm back with you here for 724 next Sunday, it's going to be October, the month of my birth and my favorite month. You know why? Not just because I was born that month, but because it's Halloween, my favorite holiday. I love October. Can't wait. I'll see you guys next week. Take care.
The Sala Monster sounds off.
Monday Night Raw is such an obnoxiously boring, uninspiring television show that if they want a hot shot of Money in the Bank cash in and a title change and try to put something exciting out there for a change, maybe it'll keep me from dozing off by hour three. The show is fucking awful.
The Sala Monster sounds off. Available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for sound off extras and more. And follow the Sala Monster on Twitter @SalaMonster.
Sala Monster.
Solo Monsters.
Put that cigarette out.
Sala Monster sounds off.